Well, the name of our Torah portion this week is Vezot HaBracha. Vezot HaBracha, which means, and this is the bracha, the blessing. And it starts in Deuteronomy chapter 33. And the first two words are Vezot HaBracha, and this is the blessing that Moses, the man of God, bestowed upon the children of Israel before his death. Somebody texted me, a friend texted me yesterday, he says, what is a bracha? What is a blessing? And it's kind of hard to define because we want to be blessed and we're told to bless others. We're told to bless God. And we know that a blessing is the opposite of a curse. A curse means that the road is rough. There are a lot of speed bumps. It's like a machine without oil in it. And it can run, but it runs hot, it runs rough, it runs loud, and it doesn't run long. And people, even believers, can have curses in their lives where everything's just difficult. They put lots of energy in, and some fruit comes out, but it's just not what you'd expect. Whereas people with blessing in their lives, they put the same amount of work in and get an abundance of fruit coming out. Things go smoothly. Doesn't mean there's never troubles, but the troubles themselves are blessings from God. So a bracha, a blessing, is like putting oil in the machine. It's like putting, just smoothing the way, getting the speed bumps out of the way. But what does it mean when we bless God? Same thing. He wants to do works in our lives, and when we bless Him, we remove the speed bumps in front of Him. You know how the prophet says, prepare the way of the Lord, right? Make the high places low and fill in the low places, make the crooked straight. What are you doing? You're making a highway for God to come into your life. You move the stuff out of the way so He can work more easily and effective in your own life. And I have a feeling we're having issues with the screen, aren't we? So let me just unplug this and plug it back in. Yeah, I'm always suspicious when the kids are sitting up here because they might unplug something. I can't tell. You might want to check the plug up here and make sure that's plugged in. There's so many connections. Oop. And disconnections. So, all right, let's see if this helps. All right, everything connected? All right, it's going to work. Ah, it's a miracle. I told you there'd be a miracle this morning. It's back there. Now, there it is. See, there we go. All right, what a blessing. So blessings. Now, let me give you a real practical way you bless others. Let's start with a curse. Have you ever had anybody say something to you that just cut you right to your heart and soul? And maybe they said it in the morning, and it ruined your day. They said something sharp and mean. They did something that was just a stab in the back. You lost your appetite. You couldn't focus at work. You found yourself snapping at your spouse, at your kids, and you just got depressed. You didn't feel like doing anything. It's because of a word that was spoken to you. And then maybe that night you just couldn't sleep. You tossed and turned because you just kept replaying this horrible thing. And maybe it's just a word. Now take that and turn that around, and someone speaks a blessing to you. We always put a lot of weight when people say cutting mean things to us. But you ever think what a blessing it is when you speak something encouraging to somebody else? It's just as powerful the other way as the curse is that way. Don't ever underestimate the power of your words. When you catch someone doing good and you draw their attention to it, you tell them, you know, I just want you to know that you're a blessing to me this week because I thought of something you said and it's just been sticking with me. Thank you for saying that. You're not flattering. Flattery is not a good thing, but to bless somebody. We so easily take each other for granted, but when somebody says something that's critical, then, oh, we're really tore up about it. So blessing is when you speak something to somebody, it changes their world. And it even can affect the physical world because they're going to be more in tune with God. They're going to be lit up. their spirit is just going to fill the space around them. And real things can transpire. So when you see Moses speaking blessings here, these are powerful truths he's speaking. Now, where else do we see a man ready to die and he speaks blessings over his sons? Jacob, of course. Now, Isaac, he had two sons. He spoke blessings over Jacob and Esau. And he didn't realize which one was which at the time. But Jacob, when he was dying, he called his 12 sons around him and he blessed them. And his blessings took the form of prophecies as well. And he blessed them in their birth order because Jacob was the father of the 12 tribes. Now Moses will also bless the 12 tribes, but not in their birth order. He's not the father of the 12 nations or the 12 tribes, but he's the spiritual father. And he blesses them according to their conquering of the land. And he starts that way and just goes straight through. And in the Thursday update, I ask you to go back to Genesis 49 and then chapter 33 of Deuteronomy and compare these blessings. You see overlaps. You see how they interconnect with one another. And Moses, who's the one who wrote Genesis, he was completely aware of Jacob's blessings. But Moses wrote different blessings, worded differently, different order, as he was inspired of God. And it's good to take both of these and put them together. That first set of blessings in Genesis 49 were spoken in Egypt. Right after the people had gone into Egypt, a few years later, Jacob speaks these blessings and dies. Then the slavery begins shortly after. And these blessings are spoken at the end of those centuries and the 40 years of wandering. Moses is about to die. He speaks these blessings as they get ready to return to the land. And instead of taking time to go through each one of them, I've done this before in past teachings. I want to just give you a summary of what is encapsulated in each one. With Reuben, Moses says, "Reuben, I hope you stay alive. May Reuben live and not die. May his population be included in the count." Because Reuben, though he's the firstborn, and the blessing and the birthright were naturally his, he lost them. He lost his firstborn status because he could not bridle his passion. And it affected the tens of thousands of people who descended from him. And he was close to the point of disappearing altogether from the 12 tribes. Judah. Judah is the tribe from which the kings come, from which Messiah came. And he's an example of the royalty and power of Messiah. I want to take just those two. They're very opposite, aren't they? There were no great Bible heroes who came from the tribe of Reuben. And yet so many came from Judah. I mean, David, Solomon, Yeshua, among others. And you know, in each of our lives, there's a bit of Reuben and a bit of Judah. Look at these 12 blessings, and the words are spoken as potentials and also weaknesses and dangers in your own life. And that's a blessing to know what your flaws are. And this is why when we share flaws with another person and have to point them out, we do it in a way that's couched completely in love, and hope and encouragement, so that by sharing a shortcoming that someone else has, sharing it with them, you do it in a way that's going to be a real blessing to them. So instead of telling your brother or sister, "You know, you're really stupid," you say, "You have the potential to learn. I want to encourage you to study more." You see? One comes across as a curse, the other can come across as a blessing. That's a terrible example, but you get the idea. Levi, this was the priestly tribe. And they gained identity through self-control, just the opposite of Reuben and Simeon. Let's look at a few of the words that Moses spoke over Levi. Verse 8, of Levi he said, "Your Tumim and your Urim befit your devout one whom you tested at Massah and whom you challenged at the waters of Meribah. The one who said of his father and mother, 'I have not favored him,' His brothers he did not give recognition, and his children he did not know. For they, the Levites, observed your word and your covenant they preserved. What's he talking about? That sounds like bad things. Or remember at the testing, especially at the scene of the golden calf? Levi was the only tribe that did not participate in that idol worship. So Moses called the people who were for him to come to his side, and all the Levites were there. And he said, put your swords on, go through the camp. And when you find some people sinning in idolatry with the golden calf, you have to slay them. That means they were slaying brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, parents. I believe this is what Yeshua had in mind when he said, he who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. I believe Yeshua was thinking of this, thinking of Levi. Levi became the priestly tribe because they love God more than family and more than culture. That's a real test for a lot of people. Who do you love more? Your family, your children, or God? Who did Abraham love more? Simeon. He's an example of losing identity through lack of self-control, indulgence of the flesh. Though he and Levi were brothers, and they went in and slew the people of Shechem in an act of passion, Levi repented, drew close to the Lord. Simeon did not. Simeon lost their inheritance. If you look on a map of the inheritance of the tribes of Israel, you won't see Simeon there. Simeon dwelt in Judah's territory. He was scattered throughout the territory of Judah. Benjamin, he's a picture of the messianic Jewish believer. Do a study of Benjamin's life, and you'll find he's unique of the 12 sons. He was the youngest. He was the newest kid on the block. But he is a picture of the Jewish person who has faith in Yeshua as his Messiah. He's unique, one of a kind, especially beloved of the Father. Now, Ephraim and Manasseh don't have their own blessing, but their father, Joseph, he gets the blessing, and they're mentioned within his. Because Joseph had two sons who were each adopted in among the 12 tribes. Zebulun and Issachar, they're an example of the power of partnership. Zebulun, they were merchants, they made the money. Issachar, they were the students. And Zebulun took their money and gave a big chunk of it to the tribe of Issachar so they could continue in their studies and in their teachings. And God, in both Genesis and here, blesses them and praises them because of this partnership that they were in. Gad, an example of the strength and protection of Torah. Dan, the power of small things. You'll see what I mean when you study Dan. Naphtali, now this is the area where 11 of the 12 disciples lived. It's the area of the Galilee and then just north of the Galilee. The only disciple that did not come from the tribe of Naphtali and the land of Naphtali was Judas. He came from the south, from the area of Judea. And Naphtali is a special blessing. In fact, in Matthew 4, verses 13 to 15, it says, and leaving Nazareth, he, Yeshua, came and settled in Capernaum, which is right on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, which is by the sea in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali. This was to fulfill what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet, quote, the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. And it goes on. Asher, if you thought I misspoke when I said 11 of 12 of the disciples were from the tribe of Naphtali, it was a new discovery I've made, and I don't have time to go into here. But 11 of the 12 were from the tribe of Naphtali. And then Asher, the riches of the word. So that's something you could use as like a little study guide, some thoughts that I came together with studying the two sets of blessings. But let's go on to chapter 34. Actually, let's take the last verse of 33. Where here Moses just blesses the entire people of Israel. Fortunate are you, O Israel. Who is like you? In Hebrew, that's mi kamocha. Does that sound familiar? In the Song of the Sea in Exodus 15, we sing, mi kamocha ba'elim Adonai, who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? But here, through Moses, God is saying, who is like you, Israel? You're unique. Who is like you, O people delivered by Adonai, the shield of your help, who is the sword of your grandeur? God is our sword and our shield. It comes from this verse. Your foes will try to deceive you. If your translation says something different, some translations put other things there than deceive, but the word there is clearly deceive. Your foes will try to deceive you, but you will trample their haughty ones. And then we come to chapter 34. Moses ascended from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo. Here's the view from Mount Nebo looking towards the land of Canaan, the land of Israel. It's the way it looks today. Mount Nebo is roughly 8-10 miles due east of the northern tip of the Sea of Galilee. The Dead Sea. Sea of Galilee is up here. Jordan comes down to the Dead Sea. Then you go east, about 8 miles due east. That's Mount Nebo. And this is where God took Moses to the summit of the cliff that faces Jericho, and Adonai showed him the entire land, the Gilead, as far as Dan. So Dan is way up in the north. Then all of Naphtali and the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, that's coming down just a little bit below the north. The entire land of Judah, which is further south, and then as far as the western sea, that was to be the Mediterranean Sea. The Negev, which is in the far south and the plain, the valley of Jericho. So he takes him, shows him everything from north to south, from west to east. And Adonai said to him, this is the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, I will give it to your offspring. I have let you see it with your own eyes, but you shall not cross over to there. So Moses, servant of Adonai, died there in the land of Moab by the mouth of Adonai. He died there by the mouth of Adonai. If yours says by the word of Adonai, that's incorrect. He died by the mouth of Adonai. How does the Torah start? God creates the world, the heavens and the earth. He creates Adam, and he breathes from his mouth into Adam's nostrils the neshama of life. And here we see Moses. It's like God, with his mouth, took his neshama back. Brings it full circle, doesn't it? And oh, what was accomplished between the beginning of Genesis and here at the end of Deuteronomy? You know, your life is something that's given to you by God, and he will take it away. He makes us a deposit of his very own spirit into an infant's body. An infant can do what he wants with it. He always has that nudge from God is what's right, but he also has the nudge from the enemy, from the world, the culture, as to what's wrong. But he gets free will to decide. But at the end of his life, God says, okay, that neshama, it's mine. I'm taking it back now. And then at Judgment Day, we're going to see what you did with it. What did you do with this neshama, this piece of me that I planted in you? These, you know, the parable of the talents and the gold. And you have to give an account as a steward of what you did with what I gave you. It's quite a picture, quite a picture. Verse 6, he buried him in the depression. Who buried him? God buried Moses in the depression in the land of Moab opposite Beth Peor, and no one knows his burial place to this day. Like Adam, like Moses, we don't know where either one is buried. Moses was 120 years old when he died, and his eye was not dimmed. His vigor had not diminished. The children of Israel bewailed Moses in the plains of Moab for 30 days. Then the days of tearful mourning for Moses ended. Joshua, son of Nun, was filled with the spirit of wisdom because Moses had laid his hands upon him. Now, today, when we use the name Moses, we think of the man who gave us the Torah, who God gave us the Torah through. We also think of the Torah itself. Several places of Scripture talks about Moses being read, Moses being studied. It's referring to the Torah. And in Acts chapter 10. It talks about how Moses is read in the synagogues every Shabbat in these cities all over the world. So when Moses, when the Torah puts its hands on you, when it acquires you, you're filled with what? A spirit of wisdom. Spirit of wisdom. And look at the two things. It says, the sons of Israel, verse 9, now Joshua, Yeshua, that's his Hebrew name, the son of Nun, was filled with the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. And the sons of Israel listened to him. To who? To Yeshua. To Joshua. And did as Adonai commanded Moses. In other words, following Joshua and following what God had spoken through Moses, there was no conflict between the two. Whereas today we're told there is a conflict between what Yeshua spoke and what Moses wrote. Our theme verse here at Beth Tikkun is Psalm 119, 174, which says, I long for your Yeshua, O Adonai, and your Torah is my delight. One is the word in writing on parchment. The other is the word made flesh, but they're the same word. They are not at all different. They both express the heart of God, as I think Karen mentioned this morning in prayer. They reveal the very heart and essence of God's heartbeat. But if you listen to Yeshua says, I don't have room for that Torah, guess what? You're not hearing what Yeshua says. And if you study Torah, but you just say, well, Yeshua, I'm not so sure about him, you're not hearing what the Torah says. When you put the two together, now you've got the word of Moses and Yeshua together. The song of Moses, song of the Lamb. Now you've got the true message of what God wants to speak. It's by putting the two together. Moses could give them the Torah and bring them up to the Jordan, but the Yeshua was necessary to carry them across. It's a team effort, definitely a team effort. And that's what I love about Beth Tikkun, this place of repair and restoration, putting the two back together where they've always belonged. No more of this having to choose one or the other. They go together. They go together. Never again has there arisen in Israel a prophet like Moses. Well, when that was written, there hadn't. But Moses himself prophesied that God will send you a prophet like me. Him you will hear. And that prophet, of course, is Yeshua. So we can say there has arisen another prophet like Moses, whom Adonai knew face to face, as evidenced by all the signs and wonders that Adonai sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh and all his courtiers and all his land, and by all the strong hand and awesome power that Moses performed before the eyes of all Israel. You know, I was trying to decide just where to take this teaching, and I had ordered something in the mail for the Beth Tikkun Library. It just happened to arrive yesterday afternoon. And while I was trying to ponder how to steer this teaching, I thought, let me pop this in and watch it. And that's how we finished the teaching. I want to show you a miracle. Unfortunately, I have to say goodbye to the people listening on CDs and the internet because of copyright laws. But I'm going to ask if we can dim the lights, and we're going to put this video up here if you want to move up closer. I want you to see the miracle. I want you to see the land that Joshua brought the people to. And while they're getting this ready, just go ahead and push the button whenever you're ready. You know, the Israelites, they were removed from their land during the Egyptian exile, the Babylonian exile, and now in the Roman exile. But every prophet, except for Jonah, prophesied their return and what you're about to see fulfilled in this video.